Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
These are the gates to a living nightmare. A nightmare where people have been suffocating under persistent bombardment, mourning their families, struggling for water, for food, for electricity and fuel.
The United Nations top human rights official has called for far more humanitarian aid to be allowed into Gaza as he accuses both Israel and Hamas of committing war crimes. We'll speak to the Palestine Red Crescent Society about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Then we speak with a Palestinian-American poet and physician, Fadi Judah. Dozens of his family members have been killed in Gaza over the past month. Plus, we look at last night's Republican primary debate, which Donald Trump skipped again.
I'm sick of hearing the media, I'm sick of hearing other people blame Israel just for defending itself. We will stand with Israel in word and in deed, in public and in private.
The last thing we need to do is to tell Israel what to do. The only thing we should be doing is supporting them and eliminating Hamas.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Tens of thousands of Palestinians scrambled to flee northern Gaza on foot Wednesday after Israel's military gave them a four-hour window to leave. Israeli officials say some 100,000 civilians remain in northern Gaza, down from more than a million a month ago. Human rights groups say many seniors, pregnant people, parents of young children and people with disabilities have been unable to heed Israel's mass evacuation orders. This is Ahmed Mohammed, whose neighborhood near the Al-Shati refugee camp came under intense Israeli bombardment.
May Allah protect us, because under these circumstances, anyone who wants to leave needs to have enough resources to be able to do that. Those without will have to stay where they are. It's as if they've sentenced us to death.
The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says 70% of Gaza's residents are displaced. Supermarkets have been swept clean of food and other essentials. Israeli assaults have destroyed about a dozen of Gaza's bakeries. With no clean drinking water, Palestinians have been forced to bathe in the Mediterranean Sea, where a total shutdown of Gaza's wastewater treatment plants has forced the daily release of huge quantities of untreated sewage. The World Health Organization warned Wednesday of the spread of disease. It says since early October, there's been a 16-fold increase in cases of diarrhea, most of them children under five. Gaza's health ministry says one Palestinian child is being killed every 10 minutes. 4,324 children have been confirmed killed in 33 days of relentless bombardment. Another 1,350 children are missing and presumed buried under the rubble. More than 10,500 Palestinians in Gaza have been killed. On Wednesday, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, traveled to the Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing to Gaza, where he demanded an immediate ceasefire and accused both Israel and Hamas of committing war crimes.
This is the gateway to a hellish nightmare. I cannot even fathom to think what people are going through on the other side. And then I see in front of me the lifeline that would bring relief and humanitarian assistance, which until now has not been enough, woefully inadequate.
To see our interview with Volker Turk, as well as the head of the New York office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, who resigned in protests over Israel's assault on Gaza, go to democracynow.org. In the occupied West Bank, the Palestinian Health Ministry says an overnight Israeli military assault on the Jenin refugee camp has killed eight people and wounded at least 14 others. Elsewhere, Palestinian media workers took to the streets of Ramallah Tuesday to condemn the killing of their colleagues and demand Israel be held accountable by the International Criminal Court and the United Nations. This is Nasser Abubakar, head of the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate.
More than 60 media organizations were destroyed. Dozens of journalists' families were killed. Dozens of houses that belonged to journalists were bombed. More than 22 broadcasting channels in the Gaza Strip stopped working completely. This is in addition to the greater crime, which is the killing of journalists themselves. More than 40 journalists and workers in media institutions were killed in Israeli bombardment.
CIA Director William Burns is in Qatar today, where indirect talks are underway aimed at a deal that would see Hamas release hostages in exchange for a three-day ceasefire in Gaza. The talks reportedly revolve around the release of 12 hostages, half of them U.S. citizens. Last month, Qatar was reportedly closing in on a deal to release 50 hostages that fell apart when Israel launched its ground invasion of Gaza. Hamas has claimed more than 20 hostages have been killed by Israel's bombardment. It's believed Hamas is holding more than 240 people captive. Israel's Supreme Court has banned anti-war protests after residents of Arab-majority towns in northern Israel applied for permits to call publicly for a ceasefire. Israel's High Court of Justice sided with police who said protests would divert critical resources. On Wednesday, Israel's Knesset amended its counterterrorism law, introducing a new criminal offense, the, quote, consumption of terrorist materials, unquote. Violators face up to 1 year imprisonment. Human rights groups have compared the amendment to thought policing and warn even passively downloading material produced by Hamas could land people in prison. More than 300 Ukrainian scholars, artists, and activists have signed a letter expressing solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. They write, quote, Palestinians have the right to self-determination and resistance against Israel's occupation, just like Ukrainians have the right to resist Russian invasion, unquote. The letter stands in contrast to the stance taken by Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, who'd been planning to go to Israel today to show support for Israel's assault on Gaza, but canceled after news of his travel plans leaked. In Belgium, the Deputy Prime Minister, Petra de Sutter, called Wednesday for the European Union to immediately suspend its association agreement with Israel and called on Belgium's government to take meaningful action to stop the violence.
It is time for sanctions against Israel. The rain of bombs is inhumane. While war crimes are being committed in Gaza, Israel ignores the international demand for a ceasefire.
In 2020, the Deputy Prime Minister, Petra de Sutter, made history as the first transgender minister in Europe. Here in the United States, dozens of Jewish peace activists led a peaceful sit-in protest at the office of Earl Blumenauer Wednesday, calling on the Democratic Congress member to support a lasting ceasefire in Gaza. On Capitol Hill, more than 100 congressional staffers staged a walkout demanding their bosses back a ceasefire in Gaza. Also on Wednesday, over 1,000 employees of USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, signed a letter backing a ceasefire. They added, quote, humanitarian assistance efforts and life-saving aid are largely rendered moot in situations of escalating and indiscriminate bombing and violence, unquote. In Sudan, thousands have been forced to flee West Darfur as the Rapid Support Forces militia makes major advances in the region, seizing cities from the Sudanese army. CNN reports the RSF is killing and torturing various ethnic groups. Fighting between the country's military and RSF broke out on April 15th in Khartoum and has since spread. At least 10,000 civilians have been killed. Many more injured. The UN says 4.5 million people have been internally displaced, while over 1.2 million have fled Sudan, many of them crossing into Chad.
They told me that my brother was killed and we do not know where he is. I, my mother, and my sister's children came to Chad. We don't know where my father is. We couldn't find him. They burned everything and took everything. We did not bring anything with us, only God and our clothes.
The UN warns the conflict could soon engulf South Sudan and the disputed Abyei region. Sudan's health system is stretched to the breaking point, they say, as 4 out of 5 health facilities have stopped functioning in some areas. Cholera, measles, dengue, and malaria are quickly spreading, as is malnutrition. The warring parties met for talks in Saudi Arabia this week, where they agreed to help facilitate humanitarian aid access, but did not agree to a ceasefire. The European Union's Climate Monitoring Agency says 2023 is on track to be the hottest year in at least 125,000 years. October shattered the previous record set for the month set in 2019, with surface temperatures soaring to 0.85 degrees Celsius above historical averages. On Wednesday, a United Nations report found the world's top fossil fuel producers still plan to produce more than double the amount of fossil fuels in 2030 than what would be consistent with limiting global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius. In Somalia, historic rainfall and flooding has killed at least 29 people and displaced over 300,000. The flooding's also destroyed vital livestock and farmland. This is a displaced person describing the scene at one of the camps that's been set up to house fleeing residents.
It is raining on us for the fifth day. Lying in the rain killed two elderly women. Our makeshift shelters were washed away. Children are missing now. We do not know whether they are dead or alive. We request the aid agencies to urgently help us. This rain is a disaster.
The downpours come after a protracted drought in the Horn of Africa that killed an estimated 43,000 people in Somalia last year. The climate crisis is increasing unpredictable cycles of extreme weather. Democracy Now! Will be broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Dubai in December. In Texas, an explosion at a chemical plant in San Jacinto County triggered a massive fire, sending plumes of black smoke into the sky. Authorities ordered a nearby school to evacuate and others in the vicinity to shelter in place. The plant belongs to Sound Resource Solutions, a maker of solvents for glue and paint remover. The chemicals processed at the plant are highly toxic and have been linked to cancer, among other serious health issues. Texas Democratic State Senator Roland Gutierrez said, quote, "Unfortunately, chemical explosions are commonplace in Texas. For decades, politicians like Ted Cruz have rolled back environmental protections and safety standards. Now our families, workers, and communities are left to deal with the fallout," he said. Five candidates vying for the Republican Party's 2024 presidential nomination squared off in Miami, Florida, Wednesday evening for their third debate. In one of the evening's most heated exchanges, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott pressed former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley to commit to support a federal ban on abortions after 15 weeks. Haley countered she would, quote, support anything that would pass Congress. Once again, Republican frontrunner Donald Trump skipped the debate in Miami. Instead, he hosted a rally nearby in South Florida where he mocked other candidates, praised Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban as the, quote, leader of Turkey, and confused North Korean leader Kim Jong-un with Chinese leader Xi Jinping.
Kim Jong-un leads 1.4 billion people, and there's no doubt about who the boss is, and they want me to say he's not an intelligent man.
Trump also said Hungary borders on Russia and Ukraine, which it doesn't. We'll have more on last night's Republican debate later in the broadcast. Meanwhile, the Minnesota Supreme Court has rejected a bid to block Trump from the state's Republican primary ballot next month. There are similar efforts underway in Colorado and Michigan to bar Trump from running under the insurrection provision of the 14th Amendment. SAG-AFTRA and Hollywood Studios have reached a tentative agreement ending the record-breaking 118-day strike. The deal includes an increase in minimum wages of 7%, a streaming participation bonus, higher pension and health contributions, and protections against artificial intelligence. This is Los Angeles SAG-AFTRA member Emily Kincaid, who highlighted the sacrifices made by union members to reach the historic agreement.
We have a lot of our strike captains on the line that have been close to eviction and have had their only meal of the day be while they're striking. So it has not been easy, but we all have come together for a singular purpose, and we've all helped each other, and we knew we wanted to keep going until we got the deal that we deserved.
And in Bangladesh, clashes between protesting garment workers and police led to the death of at least one worker Wednesday, while several others were wounded. Workers in the garment manufacturing hub of Ghazipur, on the outskirts of the capital, Dhaka, have been protesting for weeks to demand livable wages. On Tuesday, authorities announced an increase in the monthly minimum wage to $113, up from $75. But workers, who are asking for a minimum of $208 a month, rejected the offer. This is Rahima Begum.
Have you seen the price of potatoes and onions in the market? The new hike will not compensate for the deficit of our needs. It should be raised farther. We have to pay rent, food, and children's education. The market economy is on fire. How can we go on like this?
Bangladesh has some 3,500 factories employing about 4 million garment workers, most of them women. They're making clothes for fast fashion brands in the U.S. and Europe, including H&M and Gap, and sell to major chains like Walmart. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Israel and the United States are continuing to reject calls for a ceasefire in Gaza as the death toll from Israel's bombardment tops 10,500, including over 4,000 Palestinian children. Tens of thousands of Palestinians in northern Gaza have evacuated their homes on foot as Israeli troops attempt to forcibly seize control of the area. The UN estimates 1.5 million Palestinians have been displaced in Gaza. That's 70% of Gaza's population. Many Palestinians fear Israel will never allow them to return to their homes. On Wednesday, the top human rights official at the United Nations, Volker Turk, traveled to the Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing, where he accused both Israel and Hamas of committing war crimes.
Rafah crossing has been the symbolic lifeline for the last month for the 2.3 million in Gaza. The lifeline has been unjustly, outrageously thin. These are the gates to a living nightmare. A nightmare where people have been suffocating under persistent bombardment, mourning their families, struggling for water, for food, for electricity and fuel. On the other side of this gate is Gaza, already described as the world's biggest open-air prison before 7 October, under a 56-year occupation and a 16-year blockade by Israel. The atrocities perpetrated by Palestinian armed groups on the 7th of October were heinous. They were war crimes, as is the continued holding of hostages. The collective punishment by Israel of Palestinian civilians is also a war crime, as is unlawful, forcible evacuation of civilians.
In Gaza City, Israeli airstrikes have hit areas near Al-Shifa Hospital, Gaza's largest hospital. Meanwhile, most operations at Al-Quds Hospital have been halted due to dwindling food fuel supplies and daily Israeli attacks on areas around the hospital. Most roads to the hospital have been destroyed. The hospital is run by Palestine Red Crescent Society, which is part of the International Red Cross. We go now to Ramallah in the occupied West Bank, where we're joined by Nabal Farsakh, a spokesperson for the Palestine Red Crescent Society. Thanks so much for being with us. If you could start off by talking about the state of the hospitals in Gaza right now, and what hospitals are you being told that you must have evacuated, and what is the response of the Palestinian Red Crescent, Nabal?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. The situation now in hospitals is dire. Almost 18 hospitals out of 35 in Gaza Strip has been gone out of service, either due to bombardment or because extreme shortage of they are running out of the fuel and the medical supplies. The rest of the hospitals are operating under extreme difficult situations. They are having extreme shortages of medical supplies and medicine, as well as almost running out of fuel. For example, Al-Quds Hospital, yesterday we had to reduce all services and operations in Al-Quds Hospital to the extent that the major and main generator in the hospital has been turned off, and now we are only using the small generator. The hospital's surgical ward has been shut down as well. The hospital's oxygen generator also has been shut down, and now we are using oxygen cylinders. According to the information, we are only now for 24 hours and we will be completely shutting down because we will be running out of fuel. Basically, up to this moment, none of the aid has been allowed to get into Al-Quds Hospital. This is the fourth day, and Al-Quds Hospital has been under intense bombardments. Along all roads that leads to Al-Quds Hospitals are closed because of the bombardment. The roads are closed. Our emergency medical services team, they are also inside the hospital, so they are unable to go out of the hospital to arrive the wounded people. In the area, they can see from where they are inside the hospital that there are many wounded people very close to the hospital, but unfortunately, they feel helpless because of the intense bombardment is so much dangerous. So they even can go out to arrive those wounded people and save their lives. And the area where the hospital is located now became so much dangerous, as highlighted. All roads are closed, so nobody can get into Al-Quds Hospital. Unfortunately, none of the aides has been allowed to get into Al-Quds Hospital. 2 days ago, we were waiting for aid to come in through ICRC. However, the ICRC convoy was targeted by Israeli occupation forces, and unfortunately, they were unable to deliver the aid to Al-Quds Hospital. So now the situation, not only the problem is the fuel, we are barely having food or water for our staff and our patients, and for over 14,000 civilians who are currently sheltering inside the hospital. Because of the continuous bombardments, all the windows have been fall down, I mean the glass, so they are literally open. And at night time, it became so much cold, even for families who are lying and sleeping on the ground. You can't imagine the picture of children who are feeling so much cold and don't even have a blanket to warm them up. So now we are in urgent need for everything, for blankets, for food and water. Those children, they even have a very minimum amount of food. As I mentioned, we barely have even food for the staff or for the patients. This is the third day all Gaza City and the north is out of bread because all bakeries have already run out of fuel. So none of Gazans who are now currently in Gaza and the north are able to get any piece of bread. There's still in Gaza and the north almost 500,000 civilians who are still now sheltering in schools and hospitals in those areas where Israel forced its people to evacuate. It's not easy to say just evacuate because intense bombardments are just taking place all over. And it's not safe to evacuate yourself, taking into consideration that, as you highlighted, many people have to do that in foot under intense bombardments. There is no transportation. There is complete destruction of the road and infrastructure. And simply an ICRC convoy was targeted while it was in its way from the south to the north, so how it would be safe for civilians to evacuate themselves to the south.
And Nepal, so if you could respond to the fact that Israel has said either evacuate from Al-Quds Hospital or the Palestinian Red Crescent is responsible for any deaths. And then also, you know, you've said that, you know, oxygen generators have now been shut off. You're relying on oxygen cylinders, that fuel is running out. I mean, how will this go if you don't have access to fuel? What do you fear will happen to these patients who are dependent on oxygen, not to mention all of the other medical supplies that are dwindling, if not have entirely run out?
Yes, we have announced it repeatedly that we have around 500 patients inside the hospital. Many of them are connected to life support machines. They are in the intensive care unit. We have babies in incubators. We don't have the means to evacuate them safely. Evacuating them means killing them, taking into consideration that already intense bombardments are taking place. So there will be no even any way to evacuate the staff along with 14,000 civilians who are currently taking shelter because simply they have no way to go to. Hospitals, healthcare personnel, healthcare facilities should be protected under international humanitarian law. There will be no justification for Israel targeting Al-Quds Hospital, although even the WHO has announced that Evacuation orders against hospitals are impossible to implement. They constitute a death penalty for patients. Doctors, nurses, healthcare workers should not put in an option to choose either to lose your life or risk your life, or even turn your back to your patients and just go away. This is not acceptable. And this situation, to be under intense bombardments, under constant fear and panic of losing your life, it's also unacceptable. As I said, for over at least a week, now 2 weeks almost, intense bombardments are taking place in a very close area of the hospital, to the extent that most of the buildings in the surrounding area of the hospital has been damaged. Airstrikes are taking place even 15 meters away from the hospital. It has resulted to at least 16 people were injured during these bombardments, to the extent that a patient in the intensive care unit was also injured. This should not be acceptable. I can't describe the situation now inside the hospital when I'm talking about 14,000 civilians, most of them are children and women, just sleeping on the hospital's ground. Every single corner in the hospital, there is internally displaced people who have no other option. This is the last choice for them. It's just seeking shelter to a place they thought they will be in a safe place. Unfortunately, this is not the case, because Israel, it looks like it's absolutely over and above the international humanitarian law. Unfortunately, as a humanitarian organization, we have completely run out of all of solutions. Over 3 weeks now, we have been calling on the international community to intervene immediately to allow the entry of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and including fuel. We have warned repeatedly, we are running out of fuel. We have already run out of fuel a week ago. So we managed to get some fuel from some gas stations who had some leftover. Unfortunately, because of the continuous blockade on Gaza particularly and the north, it's now an impossible mission to find a 1 liter of gas, a 1 liter of fuel in Gaza and the north. We have come to an end. We have already reduced all of our operations, all of our services, in order just to manage to take care of those patients who are now inside the hospital. And although we have taken all of these measures, we are only for 24 hours. At that point, the hospital small generator will shut down. And then the lives of those who are connected to life support machines, they will lose their life. We even can't imagine the situation we will be in. As a humanitarian organization, we feel helpless.
And Naval, your response to Israel saying if you don't evacuate Al-Quds Hospital, your organization, the Palestinian Red Crescent, is responsible for any deaths?
As I said, international humanitarian law is clear. Hospitals, healthcare workers, healthcare facilities, civilians should not be a target. If an attack or whatsoever happened for Al-Quds Hospital, this will be a responsibility of Israel, the responsibility of the international community, who are up to this moment failed to stand up for humanity, failed to pressure Israel to ensure the protection of civilians, healthcare personnel, and healthcare facilities. Up to this moment, 4 colleagues were killed during conducting their humanitarian role, trying to save other people's life. 22 other paramedics were injured. At least 8 ambulances completely went out of service due to Israeli bombardment and targeted 4 ambulances. This also should be stopped under all circumstances in all conflicts. Healthcare workers, healthcare personnel, healthcare facilities and hospitals, along with civilians, they should be protected. Unfortunately, 70% of the victims of thousands of people who were killed in Gaza are children, women, and elderly people. This war crimes should be stopped.
And Nibal, I mean, if you could talk specifically about the situation of children, over 4,000 killed, countless others thought to be under the rubble. But apart from that, there's a new acronym that's been in use in Gaza hospitals, WCNSF, Wounded Child, No Surviving Family. If you could say something about that, Nibal, whether you're witnessing that, how much you're witnessing it in hospitals there, Al-Quds included.
Unfortunately, because of the intensive bombardments that is taking place on people's residential buildings, houses, without even any prior warning, that has resulted to wiping up whole families. And unfortunately, many children who are survivors now, they don't even have any family.